Hello. Good afternoon. It is great to be with so many of you here today to talk about Storage Spaces Direct. We have a lot of exciting announcements to share and some, we hope, insightful explanations as well. My name is Cosmos Darwin. I'm a program manager on the Windows Server team. Today, I'll be joining Klaus Dorgensen, also a program manager on the Windows Server team, to talk about Storage Spaces Direct. Our goal today is to really give you an overview of everything that we think you need to know about Storage Spaces Direct, starting from the beginning. And so with that, let's go ahead and get started. Storage Spaces Direct is software-defined shared nothing storage. Now, for many of you, you probably know exactly what that means. But for some folks, it looks like buzzword bingo. So what's this really all about? Our goal was to enable you to use industry-standard hardware to build a lower-cost alternative to traditional storage. And the best way to understand what Storage Spaces Direct is to walk through setting it up. So that's what we're going to do now. We're going to start with a demo of deploying Storage Spaces Direct. For this, we're going to begin with just three industry-standard servers with internal drives. I want to emphasize that there is no shared storage here. There's no fiber channel or SAS fabric. There are no fancy cables. It's just three servers with local drives connected over Ethernet, which you would do anyway. And because these servers are running Windows Server 2016, I can connect to one of these servers over remote desktop and open PowerShell. So for this demo, I'm going to be using PowerShell so we can really go step by step through the deployment. This is everything that I'm going to do is not what you have to do every time you deploy Storage Spaces Direct. But for the sake of illustration and to really understand what's going on under the hood, we're going to go one step at a time in PowerShell. So here I've run the get physical disk commandlet. And I can see that on this server, right, it's just a standard server, I have six drives. I have four spinning rotational hard drive disks, and I have two solid state devices. That's it, just local drives. So the first thing that we're going to need to do is form a cluster out of these servers. This will use the built-in clustering capability in Windows Server to provide things like high availability, VM live migration. So to do that, I'm going to run the new cluster command in PowerShell. I'll give the cluster a name. I'll list off the nodes that I want to add to the cluster. And you'll see that it just takes a moment to run. And just like that, I have my cluster named demo. And I can get all the nodes in the cluster. I can see that there are three of them. There they are, one, two, three. OK, so far, everything should be pretty familiar. This is where the magic really starts. Storage Spaces Direct is going to allow us to take the drives in these servers and form a software-defined pool of virtually shared storage that is accessible to all of the nodes. To do that, in PowerShell, we're going to run the enable cluster storage spaces direct command. Now, this can take a moment to run. So we'll click yes and let it go. And then while it runs, I want to tell you a little bit about what's going on here. So if you're familiar with storage spaces in Windows Server 2012 or 2012 R2, then you know that you would have had to create and configure storage pools, set things like resiliency setting and fault tolerance, and even more obscure settings like interleave and column count. All of those settings are now being given the best possible values by default under the hood as I run this commandlet. And so just like that, now that I've enabled Storage Spaces Direct, I can run get storage pool, and I can see that I now have a pool visible to this one server that I'm on that contains all of the drives from all three servers. So I have my 12 hard drive disks, and I've got my six solid state devices in this pool. And just like that, I am ready to start creating volumes. And these volumes, I can put whatever I want in them. So to do that, I'm going to run the new volume command in PowerShell. Here, I'm going to run it in a loop just to create a bunch of them. It goes quite quickly. Now, under the hood, this is creating a storage space, also known as a virtual disk. It's creating a volume. It's partitioning it. And then it's turning that volume into a cluster shared volume, all just in one shot. Now, for those who aren't familiar, what a cluster shared volume means is that that volume will appear to all of the nodes in the cluster like it's mounted locally. So now I've created five cluster shared volumes. And there are two scenarios that we really envision where you might use this. The first one is I can take those cluster shared volumes and I can just expose them over SMB, effectively turning my Storage Spaces Direct cluster into network attached storage. So I'll create a scale out file server, I'll share those volumes over the network, and I might, for example, share them with another cluster that's running Hyper-V, and then those Hyper-V virtual machines can store their VHDX or VHD files directly on those file shares. But there's something else that we can do too. And this is new in Windows Server 2016. You may have seen that we had a session this morning on hyperconvergence. I can also use Storage Spaces Direct to create a hyperconverged cluster. Now, what that means to us is that using those same servers where I was running Storage Spaces Direct that are providing the storage, I can also run Hyper-V, and I can just place my virtual machines directly on those servers, and they'll just store their files in those local volumes. This is great for driving down hardware costs for smaller deployments and making scalability sort of easier. And an announcement that we wanted to save for Ignite, so this is new this week, Storage Spaces Direct is now officially a supported storage platform for SQL Server 2016 as well. Now, if I want to scale out, right, I've deployed a 3-node Storage Spaces Direct cluster, but what if my, you know, the needs of my organization grow and I need to scale out? It's very straightforward. All I have to do is add another node to the cluster. It's just one step. For me, because I'm doing this demo in PowerShell, that's going to look like the add cluster node command. So I'll just run that command. It'll take a moment for that node to join the cluster. We'll wait for it there. It's in the cluster now. We can run get cluster node and confirm that indeed we have all 4 nodes in our cluster. There they are, 1, 2, 3, 4. And if we go very quickly, like right now, we can actually take a look at the physical disks that are not in a pool, and I can see the drives that are in that node I just added, right? The 6 of them that I just added to this cluster. Now, this demo I had to try a couple of times because very, very quickly, like in a matter of moments, Storage Spaces Direct will automatically claim those drives into the storage pool and begin redistributing your volumes across those drives to take maximum advantage of the potential for parallelism, to get great performance, and to put you in a position where you're just ready to create new volumes with that new capacity. And everything that I've showed so far, forming a cluster, starting with just industry standard servers, and then enabling Storage Spaces Direct, getting that storage pool, creating volumes, and then scaling out. On hardware like this, takes consistently less than 15 minutes of real-world time. We're very excited about how easy it is to deploy Storage Spaces Direct, and you'll see that experience a little later when we talk about manageability. Now, another announcement beyond, you know, SQL Server 2016 that we wanted to share with you at Ignite, that we've been saving for Ignite, was that we are now officially supporting 2 nodes, clusters as small as just 2 servers with Storage Spaces Direct. This is feedback we've gotten often, and it goes a long way toward reducing the hardware cost for smaller deployments like remote offices and branch offices. Now, I said we can scale down as low as 2 servers. We can also scale up as high as 16. So anywhere from 2 to 16 servers in a Storage Spaces Direct cluster. That's over 400 drives, which if you do some back of the envelope math, allows you to easily reach petabyte scale with a single cluster. As you add servers, or if you have extra slots, as you add drives into those existing servers, Storage Spaces Direct will automatically claim them. They'll be absorbed into the storage pool, and you can just scale out as your needs grow. It's very straightforward because there's no full mesh of cabling. There's no dedicated storage fabric. All you have to do is buy the servers one at a time, and you just add it to the stack, plug it into your switch, another one, another one. Procurement could not be easier. Okay, now having given that introduction, I want to invite Klaus up to talk about performance.
So let's chat a moment about performance. So here we're seeing a system, and if you were with me earlier this week, we showed systems with 16 nodes, very high performance, et cetera. Now I'm actually going to show you a more human system, if you will. So here we have a system that has 4 machines in it, 4 servers in it, and it has 4 cluster shared volumes, and we got some NVMe devices that we use for cache in the system, and we got a whole bunch of traditional hard drives in this system, right? And then we got a bunch of VMs. In this case, there's 80 VMs running. All the VMs are running a synthetic benchmark tool doing disk I/O. So let's take a look and see. So this particular system actually hits 1 million IOPS. And you can see that it's split between about 920,000 reads and 80,000 writes per second. So this is a relatively entry-level system that is giving you just 1 million IOPS. So that's one type of system, SSDs plus HDD. You can also use an all-flash system where the entire system consists of SSD drives, that being SATA SSDs or NVMe SSDs. So in these systems, you must have some flash storage. And why is that? The reason we're doing that is because these guys. These guys, you probably recognize, this is a mechanical hard drive. A mechanical hard drive needs to rotate its disk, and it needs to move the arm around to actually read data. What that results in is you see that these types would also be lovingly called spinning rust, can do about 75 random IOPS per second for a 7200 RPM device. That is not a whole lot of IOPS. So if you look at the 75 random IOPS, you said, I had a bunch of disks in my systems, but it does not add up to 1 million, right? That is exactly why you want to accelerate these large capacity devices using flash storage so we can do fast reads and writes from the system. To do that, we have a built-in always-on cache that when we set up Storage Spaces Direct, which Cosmos showed earlier, we automatically use the fastest device in the system, SSDs, to provide the caching. The cache dynamically binds all the rotational media to it. There's no static binding. What that means is that if a device fails, we will automatically have the remaining cache device providing cache for the devices that was left on without a cache on it. The other portion of this cache is that it is completely independent of the storage pool configuration and the volume configuration. So why is that important? That is important because if you have to statically allocate a piece of cache to a volume, that means you have made that tied relationship. And if that volume ends up not needing that much throughput or IOPS, then you're effectively wasting your flash storage. So by dynamically serving and accelerating the volumes that need the acceleration, that means we go and put the flash to work where the work is needed. The other part we do is we have a very optimized algorithm when we destage from the cache into the hard drives that takes the complete chaos that happens across all your VMs in terms of I/O and try to make some sense of it and streams the data from the cache out to the hard drives in a more orderly fashion so we can drive the hard drives more of a sequential I/O, which means we can drive up the IOPS that you will effectively experience on these devices. And an anecdote here is that a team inside of Microsoft that was using our technology, they actually called us up and said, hey, wait a minute, your performance monitor counters are wrong. It shows you doing 600 IOPS for a hard drive. That's not possible. Well, it does that because we're destaging sequentially to the drives, driving up the IOPS in the system. Now, the other part we do with a shared nothing type of storage system is that we can unlock what we call NVMe SSD. Well, we're not the only ones calling it. The industry's calling it. But NVMe SSDs, which is a new class of solid-state storage devices. So an NVMe SSD distinguishes itself is flash storage, but now it's sitting attached directly to the PCIe bus in a server system, right? And it actually becomes a lot faster than a SSD that is sitting attached to a SAS HBA or a SATA controller. So we did a quick look at this. So if you take the system on the left, it's an Intel P3700, which is an 800 gigabyte NVMe SSD. And the disk on the right is an Intel S3700, which is an 800 gigabyte SATA SSD. Same capacity. And if you look at what the cost was on, in this case, Newegg, it came out to $2.50 per gigabyte on the NVMe devices and $1.78 on the SATA SSD. So clearly, you should use the SATA SSD, right? Because it's cheaper per gigabyte. Now, if you go actually measure how these things perform, you go measure it and we see, okay, the SATA SSD gives us 95,655. right? We're engineers, so we put the exact number up there. We're not going to write 95,000 or 96,000. These are absolute numbers. What do you think an NVMe SSD can do? Not quite. 324,018. Don't forget the 18. They're the most important ones. So if we come back, that is 3.4 more IOPS out of a single device, just because it was attached to the server differently. So now, if we do the same equation, but instead of looking at dollar per gigabytes, because we use these as acceleration devices, and look at how much does it cost per 1,000 IOPS the device provides, then it comes out to $6.16 per 1,000 IOPS for the NVMe, and $14.90 for the SATA SSD, completely reversed the economics. So if you need performance, there's no doubt that the NVMe device is a preferred device. Now, if you then look at the opposite part, it's like, okay, how much all storage needs some CPU assist to move from the actual storage device into the memory of the system. So you look at the CPU consumed to do 100,000 IOPS. This is all the CPU, including the VMs that is actually consuming the I/O. 37%. What do you think it does on an NVMe? 19%, which is barely half. So now you got a whole lot of CPU left over. What is that CPU going to do? Sorry? Exactly. What are you going to do with that CPU? You can give it to all your SQL servers, whatever runs on these systems, to actually do real work that makes more money to the company that you run. So our record to date, which I showed off Monday, was over 6 million IOPS in read. So that's pretty good, we think. Now, a different way to look at it is throughput. Because we talk about IOPS. But there was a different workload just about throughput. So the new record, which was announced yesterday, is that we're actually using a system with storage spaces direct achieve more than 1 terabit per second of throughput in the system. Thank you. So what we got is we got a 12-server system stacked full of NVMe devices, right, provided by, in this case, Micron, connected with networking using 100 gigabit Ethernet adapters, RDMA adapters from Mellanox, standing up 336 VMs and just blasting throughput on it. And here you see, this is the VM fleet tool. It said 160,367-ish megabytes per second. And that comes up to 160 gigabytes per second, if you translate that. Now, the other thing to notice here is the CPU consumption, because we're using RDMA in this case and NVMe, actually just hits 25% to do the storage I/O into the virtual machines. And then you can have the applications using the rest of the 75% to actually drive the workload that is consuming 160 gigabytes per second. So 1 terabit per second. Just for reference, I mentioned 100 gigabytes a second a couple of times. English Wikipedia is 11.5 gigabytes. So this system that you saw can move English Wikipedia 14 times per second into the application. I can't read that fast. All right, so what we saw, 6 million IOPS, the built-in cache, that is the key to the kingdom here, unlocking NVMe, which is really the fastest possible storage right now for us, and 1 terabit a second of throughput. So with that, Cosmos, will you come back and talk to us about fault tolerance? All right.
Thank you, Klaus.
Thanks.
Yeah, what do you guys think? Do we need to do some work on the performance side, or are we in a good place? Okay, let's talk about fault tolerance now. This is, after all, a storage product. So in something like this, fault tolerances, or you know, failures, are not really a failure mode. They're a critical design point. And we actually have a whole team in Redmond that's just been working on making sure that when hardware fails in clusters like this, you have a painless and straightforward way of dealing with it. So the first thing that we should talk about is drive fault tolerance. So Storage Spaces Direct, of course, is fault tolerant to individual drives failing. The way that we do this is essentially, in simple terms, we keep multiple copies of everything that you put in this storage. Those copies are guaranteed to land on separate drives. That way, if one of them fails, Not only is all of your data safe, but it actually remains continuously accessible throughout as well. So by default, all of those volumes that I created earlier had two drive fault tolerance, which is to say two simultaneous failures. The reason I say simultaneous is that as soon as we detect that this has happened, that one of the drives has failed, and you know, whereas we had three copies, now we only have two, we will immediately begin using those two remaining copies to recreate what was lost elsewhere in the system. And so within minutes or sometimes hours, and it's a massively parallel operation because of the way we do striping, very quickly, even if you're not watching, right, the system self-heals and gets back to having all of the copies of your data. So you had a failure, you've recovered, you've not only tolerated it, but you've actually recovered on your own. And now, as soon as you swap out that failed drive for a new one, we're back to the start, right? We can do this over and over again. So it doesn't matter how many drives fail throughout the lifetime of a storage space's direct cluster. It can take as many as happen, up to two at a time. Now, like we did for deployment, I want to walk you through everything that goes on when in this kind of a scenario. So we're again going to take kind of a painful step-by-step detour through PowerShell, if you'll humor me, just to really understand and demonstrate what is happening here. So here I have a cluster. I'll print out the cluster nodes just so you can see that I have three of them. There they are. And I have a pool, which if I look at the drives in it, I have 42 of them, and they all show that they are OK. I also have on this system three volumes, which I've named A, B, and C, and you can see their operational statuses as well. They are also OK. So far, everything is fine on this system. So that's not very interesting from a fault tolerance perspective. So we're going to make things a little more interesting. So we're going to send in one of the engineers on my team, and we're going to simulate a drive failure by essentially surprise removing a device from its slot, and I guess we probably don't need it. Maybe we'll recycle it. Having done this, if I now look at the physical disks in the system, I will see that 41 of them are OK, and one of them is rather modestly labeled lost communication. And of course, I can see that those volumes that I had, whereas they showed OK before, they now show incomplete. So what does that mean? What is incomplete? This means they're still online. All of the data is safe. They remain usable and accessible. But whereas they had three copies before, they're now missing some of what went into one of those copies. And so they would like to regenerate that data. Right? Now, I can see, for example, that if I take a look at what the cluster is complaining about, it'll tell me, hey, connectivity's been lost to a disk. You know, you should probably go check that that physical disk is working and properly connected. And it actually gives me all kinds of rich information here, some of which I had to enter at setup time, some of which it is just taking up from the hardware. So it says, hey, on the Redmond campus in building 43, in the test lab, in ILC, rack C11, the server with that name, it gives me the make and model of the server. It actually gives me its serial number as well. In slot 6, you have a drive with this make and model and serial number that you should go replace. Fair enough, fairly clear instructions, and we'll do that in a moment. Now, I want to point out that the cluster will also complain about those three volumes being degraded, so it gives us here a much more human-readable message that kind of explains what I said about incomplete. So it says, hey, you know, some data on this volume is not fully resilient, but it remains accessible, and then those additional copies can be used to recover it, so no problem. Now, ordinarily, I would then have to go through a series of software steps to kind of jettison the drive and say, okay, I'm not going to use this anymore. I want to, you know, evacuate all of the data that's on it. But I can see actually that Storage Spaces Direct has done that for me. If I take a look at drives that are retired, I have a retired drive. It's the one that failed. Moreover, if I take a look at storage jobs which are running, Storage Spaces Direct has already begun repairing this data. And in the 3 minutes that it's been running, it's actually 85% complete already. This is because, and if this is confusing, feel free to ignore what I'm about to say, but essentially we distribute all of the data kind of like dealing cards across piles. So every drive in the system has some parts of every volume. And so all of them have something to contribute to this repair. They can all in massive parallelism work together to get this done as quickly as possible. And so in this case, probably after just, we'll see, maybe a few minutes, if we take a look at those volumes again, we will see that they are all back to an OK operational status. So this could be the middle of the night. I'm not paying attention. It doesn't matter. Storage Spaces Direct will self-heal, as we've seen. OK, So we got that message earlier that told us, hey, you have to go replace this drive, and it gave us a lot of information. So let's go do that. So we're going to go find Microsoft Building 43. I'll know I'm in the right place because there's a big 43 in front of it. And then I'll go inside, and I'll find, you know, my test lab, and I'll find aisle C, which I will know is aisle C because there's a big C on it. And then I can find the rack that's labeled C11. I can find the server that has the name that ends in 19. And if I'm worried that perhaps the stickers got messed up or I'm not confident in my labeling, I can actually take a look at the serial number because that was also in that message, right? So I can be very confident that I've reached the right machine. And just in case I still had self-doubts, Storage Spaces Direct has already begun blinking the indicator light for me. So the hardware folks were good enough to include a sticker that tells us which slot is slot 6. I find slot 6, and I'm going to put in this drive, this exact drive for this demo. And the reason I put it up here is just so we can see the serial number. It's S1Z1AGHH. There's going to be a quiz at the end. I need you all to remember that. OK, there's not going to be a quiz, but I would like you to remember it. So we're going to send Alex in. Again, he's going to put that drive we just showed into the same slot. And if you're familiar with Spaces from 2012 or 2012 R2, you might think, OK, now I have to, you know, manage adding it to the pool, removing the old drive from the pool, and a series of other software steps. But actually, if we take a look again at the drives in the pool, we see that there are now 42 OK drives. And indeed, if we go and look inside that pool and we take a look at the serial numbers for each disk, we can see there is the one that we added. It is in the pool. We didn't have to do anything. We can check the storage jobs that just ran, and indeed, we have an add physical disk and a remove physical disk that took place for us. And so just like that, we are back to a perfectly healthy state. It's even gone ahead and scheduled a rebalance, which just started running, that is going to move the data. We evacuated everything off of the failed drive. Now the new drive is empty. We're now going to move data back onto it so that we're evenly distributed again. So I ran a bunch of commandlets here in PowerShell to show you in almost painful detail every step of the way. But let's take a step back and think about what I actually had to do. I had to physically remove the old drive, and I had to put in the new one. That was it. It's plug and play. It's a huge improvement for that scenario compared to where we were before. And the team that's been working on this for years now has actually done fantastic work. Kudos to them. Now, hard drives are not the only things that can fail, or in the case of servers, often it's not so much a failure, it's just you need to take it down for maintenance or something. So Storage Spaces Direct, given that all the drives are in the servers, also has server fault tolerance. Like for drives, it has, by default, 2 server fault tolerance. And so the way that that works is quite simply that those 3 copies we showed earlier not only land in different drives, they actually land in drives on different nodes as well. And so that way, if you have a server that fails, for example, it catches on fire, you're fine because you still have those 2 other copies which are in different servers. All of your data is safe, and it's continuously available. Now, this is also how we handle maintenance, right? So if you need to perhaps do a software update or make, I don't know, hardware repairs or something to a server, so you take that one server and you know, take it offline. Similarly, Storage Spaces Direct is fine, right? So you, as you have always done with a cluster, you just pause and drain the node. You don't have to take any special steps. Storage Spaces Direct will not repair. It understands what's going on. It says, hey, this server is in maintenance, and it will come back. You do whatever you need to do. And then when you bring the server back, that copy, assuming that there was I/O in the interim, that copy's a little stale, right? You may have done some writes to those other copies that haven't landed on that copy because the node was offline. However, without you doing anything, Storage Spaces Direct will automatically resynchronize all of those changes. It keeps a diff of them effectively, and it'll bring that copy up to speed. So without you having to do anything besides pause and drain the node, just like you always would, you're back to being in a perfect state. So drive and server fault tolerance, we've talked about a great deal. Something that's new and that we're really excited about is chassis and rack fault tolerance. Now, there are a couple of forces that led us to do this. The first is that with increasingly cloud-inspired hardware, form factors like a chassis that has multiple blades that share some components are becoming increasingly common. And people have ever-increasing expectations of essentially cloud-like uptime from their infrastructure. They really don't want it to ever go down. And so what we have now, it just built right into Windows Server 2016 in the operating system, is that you can tag each server as being in a particular rack or chassis. So in this case, I have 16 servers. I've got 4 in each of 4 racks. And it's very easy. I can just, in Windows, say which one is in which rack. And then Storage Spaces Direct will automatically adapt all of its configuration to respect this. And it will always place copies, not just in different drives or in different servers, but actually in different racks. So that if you have a rack outage, it's the same story. You get it at this point. The data is safe, and it's continuously available. OK, so to review what we talked about for fault tolerance, I talked about drive fault tolerance, 2 simultaneous drive fault tolerance. I talked about the work that we've done to make drive replacement and the entire drive lifecycle plug and play. I talked about server fault tolerance and the fact that it's analogous to how we do maintenance with Storage Spaces Direct. And then I briefly mentioned rack and chassis fault tolerance as well. With that, I'd like to invite Klaus back out to talk about efficiency.
All right. Thank you, Cosmos.
Thanks.
So up until this point, everything we've done have shown you basically 3 copy mirror, which is great. The only problem with 3 copy mirror is that you have to keep 3 copies, which means you are effectively 33.33 and so on percent efficient, right? So it's similar to RAID 1 with 3 copies. It provides the absolutely best performance because of its simplicity. All I need to do is just write 3 copies of data, and I'm done. Right? There is a different mechanism, though, which is the ability to do erasure coding. So when you have 4 servers or more, you can actually use erasure coding. It provides the same level of fault tolerance as 3 copy, in that we can tolerate 2 simultaneous drive or server failures, or chassis or rack failures, for that matter. And it is similar to software-defined RAID 6. In a system that has 300 terabytes of physical storage, we can do up to 80% efficiency, which will give you 240 terabytes usable storage here. So what's up? Well, there are a couple of limitations with traditional parity implementation or erasure code implementations. One of them is if you need to rebuild a copy of data because you lost a server or a disk, you actually have to read all the columns that make up that data stripe, and that ties up valuable IOPS. Right? I have to read all the disk to figure out what is missing, calculate that, and write it back out. So that's problematic. The second one is when you do update the data that is parity or erasure encoded, it ties up valuable CPU because that's a relatively expensive operation. You have to read the existing data, modify the data, and then calculate the parity and write it back out. Also, for most people, known as the read-modify-write challenge. So actively writing this data means that you're erasure coding over and over and over again. So we have, actually, Microsoft Research came up with something called local reconstruction codes, which is a variant of the traditional Reed-Solomon erasure code capability. And what it does, it actually enables much faster recovery when you lose a single drive by simply grouping the bits. So instead of having one big stripe that you see here, we basically chunk it up in 3 groups so that all you need if you lose a single disk is to read the bits that are remaining of a given group, XOR the information, and write it back out to a device that is alive. That means you're significantly reducing the amount of devices you need to touch, significantly reducing the amount of I/O you're incurring on the system, and doing the data reconstruction a lot faster, which means the chance that you actually have 2 simultaneous failures is much reduced because we recovered the system much quicker. This is an algorithm that we use in Storage Spaces Direct. This is also the algorithm that we use in Microsoft Azure. This actually does make it possible for us to use erasure coding on not only all flash systems, but also on systems that use hard drives, which is an important factor. You can imagine high-capacity hard drives, and I use erasure coding on top of it, and I get really, really good efficiency. So here is an eye chart that essentially describes the implementation across various numbers of servers and whether you have a hybrid configuration with SSD and HDD, and if you have an all SSD implementation, and what the storage efficiency you can drive off of that. So let's repeat each row here. No, I'm not going to do that. But what it effectively comes down to is in the smallest configuration that supports erasure coding, you start at 50%. And depending on your storage configuration and how many nodes you have, you can go up to being 80% storage efficient. That's pretty cool. Now, the second problem we talked about is read, modify, write, right? So if I have to write a lot of data to my storage, I have to do this over and over again. And if you've ever done that on a classic RAID 5 or RAID 6 system, you know that the performance is not nearly as good as it is when you do mirror. So we have something we call accelerated erasure coding. And what it does is when you create an erasure code of volume, what we effectively do is we front it with a portion that is mirror. So what the system does is when the applications that are running inside your VMs are writing data, and write is the hard problem, right? That's where you really need the performance. We write the data immediately into the mirror, gets, of course, the three copies across the system, and then the virtual machine is happy, right? The write is complete. Now, as the mirror fills up, we then move the data, or some of the data, from the mirror into the erasure code portion. And it is at that point that we actually perform the erasure code and put it out in the erasure code of part of the same volume. And then it can be read from there. There's no penalty for doing that. And if you need to update the data that is out there, we simply write that new data into the mirror again and invalidate the data that was out in the erasure coded volume. So this gives you a single volume that basically consists of both mirror and erasure coding and provides a much better performance compared to a traditional erasure coded only volume so that it can actually be used for somewhat performing workloads. For absolute best performing, you would still want to use mirror, of course. But this makes it a lot more achievable. So makes it possible to use it when you have a mix of hot and cold data in the same volume, like for traditional VMs that are not that performance sensitive. So efficiency. So let's take a look at a small demo here, right? So here we have a 12-node system. And I'm not going to, whenever I say 12-node, you expect that I'm immediately going to talk about IOPS. I'm not. This time I'm not. So if you take a look at the storage that's in here, each one got four SSDs and 12 hard drives in this system. There's actually 500 terabyte or half a petabyte of raw capacity in this particular system. So let's go ahead and create some volumes. First, we'll create our classic three mirror copy volumes that we talked about. Right? We're going to create a 1 terabyte volume with three copies, which means the footprint is 3 terabyte. So when we look at this volume, we see that it's 1 terabyte, and we take the output of the command here and make pretty script that Cosmos did so we can actually look at this efficiently. You can see on the rightmost, you can see the footprint is 3 terabyte and the efficiency is 33%. That's exactly what you would expect of a three copy mirror. So now let's take a look at a Perigee volume. So this is the Perigee volume across 12 servers, right? So we would go back and consult our table before and we will see exactly the efficiency that we will get from a 12 server system. And we can see that we now get 73% efficiency, right? Remember, this is resilient to two failures at the same system, which is much better than just a dual copy mirror, but it's also much more efficient than a dual copy mirror, which would be 50%, all the way up to 73%. And then when you use the last portion of it, the accelerated eraser coding, where we use both mirror and Perigee inside the same volume, let's go ahead and create three different styles, right? So we go one where we go 50-50, 500 gigabytes of mirror and 500 gigabytes of Perigee, another one that is 70-30, and another one that is 9-10. So if we take a look at the efficiency across these, we land at a pretty good spot. For the first one will show just short of 50% because of the three copies that you have as overhead. And the next one will show a higher efficiency, 54%. And the last one, of course, the highest efficiency that you would expect, because we do recommend that you sort of have somewhere between 10 and 20% of these hybrid volumes as the mirror portion, so 65% in this case. All right, let's look at CPU efficiency. So Storage Spaces Direct is inside the Windows Server kernel, right? I don't know if you saw my demo Monday, but you saw how CPU efficient we really is. Every single IOPS scenario I showed Monday ran with less than 10% of the CPU occupied with storage and network operations. So one of the secrets to do that is the fact that we leverage RDMA, remote direct memory access. So RDMA allows us to largely bypass the CPU when we transmit data over the network, and there's a lot of data transmission going on in the systems like this. What that means is that that CPU is just like you heard before, like with NVMe, is then freed up and can be used for the workload that is running inside the virtual machines. So in a different system where we're looking at the overall total CPU consumption running at 400,000 IOPS with a mixed read-write workload of 7030 and 4K random, without RDMA, this particular system consumed 50% of its CPU. Turning on RDMA reduced the CPU consumption for this system to 33%. That's actually a lot of CPU. That's 17% gain here, or 17 relative percent point gain of your CPU cost. A different way to look at it is running 100% read 4K random IOPS without RDMA, this system could do 956,889. Again, we're engineers, absolute numbers. With RDMA, that same system, the exact same hardware turning on RDMA, gave us over 1.8 million read operations. So that's the value of being able to run over an RDMA infrastructure. It's 2x the read IOPS in this case. So the value of local reconstruction codes in doing reconstruction lots faster make it possible to run erasure coding on HDDs. Accelerated erasure coding, so we basically make erasure code more palatable for mixed hot-cold data. It's kernel embedded for super efficiency, and the fact that we use remote memory access as a network transport. So now you heard a lot of features. Actually, let's now talk to one of the customers that are using some of our stuff and have been using it for a little bit.
Thanks.
Ben?
Yeah, so I work for a company called Datacom. We run out of New Zealand, Australia, and we're an outsource and service provider. So we run a bunch of data centers like this. We got some servers, and we help people out with getting their stuff up and running. We've been running Storage-Based Direct in production for about 6 months now, so well before it's been released, and we've had no data loss during that time. We've had no major issues. As a service provider, we want to try and lower our costs constantly. It means we can offer more to our customers. So we've been able to do that by things like we don't have to buy giant SANs anymore. We don't have to predict how much storage we'll need, and that makes it a lot easier. We can use cheaper drives like SATA, and we don't need to buy fiber channel switches and stuff anymore. We also have some better agility because we can do things like when we need more space or capacity, we just buy one node, add it in. We don't have to go buy another shelf, work out whether we need to buy more ports on our switches and all that kind of stuff. It also means if we need to provision more storage, we don't have to now map LUNs to hosts and refresh them and set them all up with partitions and that kind of stuff. As you see, we've got one PowerShell command, provisions it all. And that means we can even do cool things like we can put Orchestrator in front of it and now give a web interface to someone to provision more storage without having to interact with the SANs and stuff. And so we've got a number up there. We can get four nodes for 120K, and that'll give us 120 usable storage. That is three-way mirror, so that's worst-case scenario, best performance on that setup. So some of those things enable us to do things like this. We can do 4 cents a gig. Or an IOPS, it's $4 for 1,000 IOPS. And we can guarantee those IOPS because we can use storage quads, and it means every person will get what they want, and there's no noisy neighbor scenarios. Because of things like that, and the combination of we don't have to double down on licensing like we do with other hypervisors, we've got a lot of customers coming across onto our platform now. I'll give it back to Cosmos.
Cool. Thank you, Ben. It is great to see people who have been able to run this for months now, even before we've released, and are already seeing the benefits of Storage Spaces Direct. So we've talked about performance, fault tolerance, efficiency. Let's talk about manageability. I think I've shown you probably enough PowerShell demos for today. So let's leave that world and see how we really use this thing if we're not trying to understand every step of the way. So any good discussion about manageability for Windows Server starts with System Center. For those of you who aren't familiar, System Center is kind of a complementary product that pairs with Windows Server to provide management at larger scale. So when you have hundreds or maybe thousands of servers and you don't want to connect and manage each one individually, System Center solves that for you. The first thing that we should talk about with System Center and System Center 2016 is Virtual Machine Manager. So for those who are familiar with Virtual Machine Manager, if you go up in the ribbon and you choose Fabric Resources, you can then deploy a new Hyper-V cluster. When you do that now, there is a new checkbox. It says Enable Storage Spaces Direct. If you check that box, every subsequent step in the wizard is exactly unchanged, and Storage Spaces Direct will be enabled, will create that pool, everything that we showed earlier will happen, and that's all you have to do. It's kind of like BYO storage, bring your own storage, right? That Hyper-V cluster now has just brought its own storage for its own use. A very, very easy, seamless deployment experience. More than that, though, it's not just about, you know, deploying. It's also you need to monitor it once you've got it up and running. And for that, System Center Operations Manager 2016, that team has built a great dashboard that helps you not only see messages like the one we showed earlier where a drive had failed, but also to visualize quantities such as CPU or memory or IOPS in a graphical way so that you can easily keep an eye not just across all of your hosts, but actually across all of your clusters as well if you're deploying multiple clusters of Storage Spaces Direct. Now, where is all of this data coming from, right? When you see this information in System Center, where are the numbers coming from? How can you see them outside of System Center? So if you want to learn more about System Center, you can go check out their session. I believe it's coming up, I think, tomorrow. In that session, which is Breakout 3165, it's got a title something like Operations Manager, Mahesh is going to give an extensive demo of the Storage Spaces Direct management pack that they've built just for Storage Spaces Direct. But let's say you have a small branch office or something, and you don't, System Center just isn't appropriate in your context. A new feature that we have in Windows Server 2016 is the health service. This is something that we've built directly into the operating system, and it's what feeds all of that data up into System Center's Operations Manager dashboard. So the health service provides continuous, built-in, always-on monitoring, which is constantly looking for problems and raising alerts about those problems. Now, our goal was to not be noisy, so we have root cause analysis where we merge faults, which are symptoms of the same fundamental domino effect. We have a philosophy that all of the messages that you see, all of the alerts, don't just describe a problem, but they really constitute a call to action. So each one of them has an assessment of the severity, a very easy to understand description of what has happened, like, hey, the drive has failed, and precise location and description information, and a suggestion for what you should do about it, a recommended action that you could take to remediate the problem. So the health service, with its current fault coverage, this slide gives you an idea of just some of the things that it looks for in Windows Server 2016. It has extensive coverage over both the storage hardware and software stack. And you'll see if you look toward the bottom that features like storage quality of service, storage QoS, or storage replica, if they experience issues, they will also, those issues will be noticed by the health service and those alerts will be generated. So the alerts from the health service are exactly what you see in the System Center dashboard. And the fact that we've moved this logic now down from a management layer into the operating system itself is how, when I demoed the disk failure earlier, I was able to show you the contents of that message, right? Because you don't need an external software to go look at the system. The system understands its own health and can tell it to you, even in PowerShell. Now, there's more that when you're managing one of these systems that you want to look at, and we saw it on that dashboard in Operations Manager. It's not just about health problems, things that have downright failed, but there's also a lot of quantities you want to keep an eye on, things like performance and capacity and utilization metrics. So we've taken that logic and moved that down into the operating system as well. So now a cluster will aggregate its own all-up high-level metrics, things like IOPS across the whole cluster, or CPU and memory utilization across all the hosts in the cluster. So you can just connect to any one of them and ask. And I want to show you, just because I think it helps to hammer it home, I want to show you a demo of that in PowerShell. I promise it'll be quick and painless. I'm going to run just one command on any one server in my Storage Spaces Direct cluster. And I can see all of these quantities, things like the total number of IOPS that all of the servers are doing in this cluster. And if I take a look at my workload generating tool, I'll see that, in fact, I am seeing the correct value there. But it's not just IOPS, right? We have all kinds of other quantities. So the total number of IOPS, what about the amount of total space I have in my volumes and the amount of that that's left over, the CPU that I'm using, or the amount of memory that's left over across all of my servers, or even the average latency of every single I/O that has gone through the Storage Spaces Direct cluster, which, because S2D is a little bit quick, in this case had to be measured not even in milliseconds, but it was less than a millisecond. So the benefit of moving all of this logic down into the health service, into the operating system, means that it opens up all kinds of new ways of consuming this information. So I want to talk about what some folks have done with that API. The first is actually Ben, who you just heard from, who, when he saw that PowerShell commandlet that gave him all up metrics for his cluster, said, hey, you know what? I have a toolchain that I like. It's the open source Grafana dashboard building, you know, visualization engine. And because, of course, it's PowerShell, it's readily scriptable, he was able to write himself a script that grabbed that information, pushed it up into Grafana, and then he could use the best-in-class tools that he was familiar with. He didn't have to use what we gave him to make the dashboard that he wanted. And so he can visualize all of this data in exactly the way that he wants. So that's a sort of an end customer example, right? You can just interact with this in PowerShell. Similarly, you can take a look at the alerts that have been raised in PowerShell just right on the box. I want to talk now about something that one of our hardware partners has done. DataOn is a California-based vendor of hardware for the Microsoft Software-Defined Data Center. They're actually one of our oldest partners. They've been with us since the beginning of the Spaces journey back many releases ago, and they've had great success with their products like the famous cluster-in-a-box appliance. And with Windows Server 2016, they wanted to deliver to their customers a rich and customized management and monitoring experience for Storage Spaces Direct. And they saw the opportunity to do that with the health service and the APIs that we provide. So I want to give you a demo now of what it is that they're working on, because I think it's just fantastic. So here I have a laptop, and I'm just going to open up a browser. Doesn't have to be Windows. I could be doing this on my Mac. And I'll log in, and here I have a dashboard that shows me my Storage Spaces Direct cluster. I can see the real-time metrics there. I see IOPS. I don't know if it's visible from the back of the room, but that graph is updating almost every second. It's not just IOPS. It's all of those things, latency, throughput, all of this information visualized for me in the browser. And if I scroll a little further down, actually, I see that I have an alert here. One of my servers is down. Okay, so we should probably deal with that. So we'll scroll back up. We'll go into the navigation menu. And we'll go take a look at our nodes. Now, for a healthy node, a healthy server, I can see here all of my drives in this nice drive map that they've built. I can see them organized by slot number, and I can see that they're all healthy. But if instead I go look at server 3, indeed, it's marked as offline. And if I look at the performance graphs, I see that there's no IOPS coming through the server. It looks like it's down. I should probably go investigate this. Now, there are two things that I want to call out here about what DataOn has done. The first one is that they've built this using HTML5 in the browser, meaning I don't need to be at my desk to get this information. I could be on the go. I could see this on my mobile device, right? That is just a new level of freedom for monitoring a system like this. Then the other thing that I want to talk about is something that they showed me a prototype of just the other day, and I think it's really exciting. So they've been working on call home functionality. So as a user of this, I could actually opt in to having a notification of a hardware failure get sent directly to DataOn. So for example, if I have a drive that fails, they can then use their network of warehouses around the world to ship me a replacement part, potentially even before I've noticed. And in that way, they're really delivering that kind of premium, frankly, SAN-like storage experience that some customers have come to expect. It's really exciting to us to see this come together. And we have, yeah. And we've heard from other partners that they are working on similar things as well, and it makes us really happy. So to review what we talked about for manageability, we talked about System Center, talked about the health service and moving the logic that powers that System Center layer down into the operating system itself, and then exposing it via an API so that not only end customers, but also our partners can build and deliver great experiences on top of that information. Okay. We've reached the last section here. Let's talk about cost. It's a very, very quick section. Everything you've seen, Storage Spaces Direct, is included in Windows Server 2016 Data Center. If you run Hyper-V, you very likely already own this. That's the whole cost conversation. Now, we've been working in recent months with a number of the best hardware partners in the industry. And we've been working with them to deliver pre-validated and meticulously crafted and engineered systems that deliver really the best experience for Storage Spaces Direct. So you'll see here we have a wall of their logos. It's all of the names and brands that you would expect. And they have done fantastic work, I have to say, pulling long hours, running exhaustive runs of stress tests and failure simulators to make sure that these platforms, all of the components play nicely together and work really, really well. Now, all of them have many, many SKUs that they're working on. This slide just gives you a small sampling of one from each vendor. Most of them have an all-flash system, a hybrid system, a performance or a capacity-optimized system. But they've really been doing a great job of bringing this hardware to market, and we're really excited to see, this stuff go out. I want to be very clear that while Storage Spaces Direct is just a feature in Windows Server 2016, we really recommend that to deploy it, you use these meticulously engineered and extensively validated hardware platforms. They will ensure the best experience. And honestly, if you were to go to these guys' websites and try to put together a system, you'd probably end up building very close to what they've built for you. Just take the guidance. If you want to learn more about that, there was a session, I think it actually might have been earlier today, so you might have to go watch the recording, called something like Partner Offers. It's Breakout 2167. And in that session, they go through in much more detail the individual hardware offers that these partners are putting together. I definitely recommend that session. Okay, with that, I want to invite Klaus up for kind of a fun little one more thing that we want to share.
Thank you. So what you have seen over the course of this session and hopefully earlier in the show here is the stuff we've been working on for years, actually. The project on bringing Storage Spaces Direct to market started more than 4 years ago. So when we moved to the two-node support, which we announced this but have, of course, been working on for a while, we actually thought, hey, how low can we go? Right? One thing is to get to two nodes with all the hardware requirements we've had for the four nodes, et cetera, et cetera. But how low can we go? And that is what Project Kepler 47 is about. It's a proof of concept. It's not a shipping product. But I'm not sure if you're familiar with Kepler. Kepler is the space telescope. Kepler 47 is a twin sun system with a couple of planets orbiting the twin suns. The twin suns representing the two nodes, and the planets representing the VMs that are running on this particular system. So in order to build this, it was like, okay, let's go out and find the pieces that can make up a how low can we go. All right, so we went out. Well, actually, Dan Lovinger, who's sitting right over here, did all the work. I'm just talking here, talking about it. So he found this mini ITX motherboard that has a bucket load of SATA connectors on it for the drive connectivity. We use an Intel Xeon processor in this particular, an E3, to be power efficient. We use some ECC RAM, and there is a USB 3 DOM in order to boot Windows on this particular system. And we use some ordinary SATA SSDs, as well as some a big chunky metal here with some 4 terabyte SATA HDDs. Now, if you haven't seen this already, it's actually physically here. In the Microsoft stand, we do have a booth area that shows this project where you can physically go see the hardware that we put together in this nice little chassis, and we have a couple of monkeys to make it cute. Dan has been here all week talking about it, and if you haven't seen it yet, come by tomorrow, and you can get the full spiel on it. So a system like this is still completely server and drive fault tolerant, right? It does leverage the cloud witness or file share witness to make sure that we can separate a scenario where a server fails to a scenario where you have what we famously known as a split brain, where they just get partitioned to determine who stays up. This particular system has 20 terabyte of mirror storage capacity the way we configured it. It does have more than 50 gigabytes of memory, which you can have more than a handful of VMs running off of this memory in just two nodes. It is great for a remote and branch office scenario where you don't need a whole lot of resources and where cost is really a key factor because of the branch office multiplier. A couple of fun facts is that the system we built take up no more than one cubic foot. And I have to wrap my head around that because I don't speak in cubic feet. I speak in cubic meters or cubic centimeters. But that is 45% smaller than two U servers. So a different way to look at it is that they both actually fit into one carry-on bag in the overhead bin. Now, they do weigh a little more than most airlines will allow you to put up there, but it's good. The total that we paid, and this is all retail, we just went online, or actually Dan did, and bought all these pieces for a total hardware cost of $2,190, excluding the hard drives. To put that in perspective, that is less than what you paid to get here to this conference. So, this particular system has no HPA. There is no SAS expander, which is breaking all the rules we currently have in place. And there's no NIC. There's no switch, there's no Ethernet. Hey, wait a minute, did you say no Ethernet? What are we talking about here? Well, so in order to make the system fast and also drive down the cost of this, we're actually using Thunderbolt networking to connect the two servers, providing 20 gigabit of bandwidth between the two servers for VM live migration if you need to service one of the nodes, or data reconstruction if you have a drive that fails, et cetera. So that is a great and tremendous amount of bandwidth available in such a small system and for a very, very low cost. So take a quick look at the system, and this is actually from the system that is running in the expo floor. You can see here we got cluster networking, see adapter Thunderbolt trademark networking. It just shows up. And here it is. So with that, I want to say that Storage Spaces Direct is more high performing. We showed more than 1 terabit. We showed more than 6 million IOPS. It is resource efficient, using RDMA for low latency, more CPU efficiency. We have erasure coding with fast local reconstruction codes, et cetera. And we have budget friendly because, as Cosmos was saying, if you run Hyper-V and you have software assurance, you already effectively own this with Windows Server 2016 being released and announced today and released later. So with that, we thank you, and we will take questions.